This is Night Call, the new nationwide listener call-in show on vital issues. Tonight's subject, politics and the black man. Tonight's guest, Julian Bond, the first black man since Reconstruction to win a seat in the Georgia state legislature. You speak for yourself and ask your questions directly by calling Collect, Night Call's national phone numbers, area code 212-749-3311 or 866-5010. Night Call's host in New York City is Del Shields.
For a century, north and south, east and west, Negroes have been caught between definitions that declare politics is the art of the possible on the one hand, and the art of compromise on the other. For Negroes, the compromise has been the compromise of his right to live, and the possible has been for him the realization that under the present system, most things are impossible. Above all else, politics is the art practiced by insiders for insiders on behalf of other insiders. And the American Negro is and always has been an outsider. Julian Bond wrote that. He's our guest tonight. You may remember his name. He was a founding member of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, was arrested for taking part in the Interstate Freedom Rides in the early 60s. In 1965, he ran successfully for a seat in the Georgia State Legislature from a black district in Atlanta, the first time that had happened since Reconstruction. He was refused his seat by his white colleagues because of his anti-Vietnamese position, so they said. The United States Supreme Court ruled that this was in violation of Mr. Bond's constitutional rights, and he was eventually seated as a representative from Fulton County to the Georgia State Legislature. Before we start talking about politics and the black man, I'd like to remind our listeners to call us Collect and deliver their questions and comments directly to Mr. Bond on Night Call's national phone numbers, area code 212-866-5010 and area code 212-749-3311. Call us Collect from any part of the country where you're hearing Night Call on those numbers. And here they are again, area code 212-866-5010 and area code 212-749-3311. Mr. Bond, good evening. Good evening, Mr. Bond.
Good evening.
Your position seems to be that in order for the black man to be effective in politics, there must first be unified black political effort. Is this possible, and how do you go about bringing it to be?
Well, I think it is possible. In some parts of the country, it may be a little improbable, but it has been possible. In this city, as an example, where black votes have been welded together over a period of 20 to 25 years, have helped elect moderate city administrations and a coalition with some liberal white people. It can be done, I think, only by a great deal of intensive organizing in black communities all over the country. And I think we're at a point in this country as a group of people that unless we organize to do things for ourselves, we're going to find increasingly fewer numbers of other groups of people willing to do things for and with us. So we have to first get ourselves together and then begin to worry about getting with other groups of people and doing things in concert with other groups of people.
In the case of Carl Stokes in Cleveland and Richard Hatcher in Gary, Indiana, would you describe these particular men as cases where there was unified black effort?
Well, it's no question, I think, that the election returns in both those cities show that had there not been unified black political power, that neither of these two men would have ever been elected. Both received, I think, about 20% of the white vote, which is not an indication that white people in Cleveland and Gary are particularly liberal, but simply that it required almost 100% of the black vote to put these two men in office. I think that pattern is going to be repeated in a great many other American cities as the black population increases in this city, in Newark, in Trenton, in Detroit, in Nashville, in Jacksonville, and in a host of other cities all over the country. That same sort of pattern is going to be repeated where black votes have to be put together to elect black men to public office.
When black men are elected to public office, does this mean that conditions are going to become better for the black people?
Well, I think it does mean that some things are going to be better almost immediately. It doesn't mean a revolution. It doesn't mean that instantaneously the whole condition of black people is going to be changed. For instance, I don't think that people in Cleveland are fantastically better off with Carl Stokes as their mayor although I'm sure they are measurably better off with Stokes as their mayor as opposed to whomever his opposition was during his campaign. The reason they're better off is because they've got a man whom I think, and I hope they think, cares about their problems and making some attempt to solve them. But the condition of cities in this country, apart from racial questions, is so bad, economically and physically and every sort of way, that the election of a Carl Stokes or a Richard Hatcher is not going to immediately, fantastically change conditions for black people. It will make them a little better. And I think for that reason that we ought to try to get more of us in positions like Stokes and Hatcher. But it's not going to mean an overnight revolution.
When you say that it's going to get a little better, is it possible to measure that by any kind of degree?
Well, I don't know. I think it probably depends on the city. It depends on whatever governmental mechanism is already in existence. It depends on a great many things that would vary from place to place. I think black people here, for example, are much better off because we now have one black man on our city council, our board of aldermen. And the man who formerly held this position, a white man, didn't show the interest in the black constituency that this man, who's now in office, does show. This man can be called on the telephone, can be asked about some problem which may be very small, garbage collection or the placement of a street light or a traffic sign. And he gives it his attention. He gives it the time and energy that he has to spare, whereas the man who held the position formerly wouldn't do that sort of thing. And I think that is a measurable difference. And it's a difference that ought to be appreciated and ought to be looked toward as a goal for black people when they deal with politics.
Our guest tonight is Mr. Julian Bond, who is talking to us from Atlanta, Georgia, and we are discussing politics and the black man on Night Call. Mr. Bond, we're going to welcome our first Night Call listeners, and we'll give the phone numbers out again. Area code 212-749-3311 and 866-5010. That's area code 212-749-3311, 866-5010. Our first Night Call listener, Mr. Philip Gilbert, who is listening to Night Call over radio station WLIB-FM. Welcome to Night Call, sir.
Thank you. Mr. Bond.
Yes.
I am from, what you would say from the younger generation of the black society. And I feel that, for generations and generations, the black man has been saying, my children will benefit from it, and their children will benefit from it. And I think that it's at a point that, it'll come through time that the previous generations have been talking to me. I mean, I feel that I am that generation that they say, they would, advantage from it. Now, when you say that, it'll come through time, I mean, it might sound selfish, but I want to live this through my life. I mean, my children, the best for them. But I'm living mine. I mean, when I'm gone, they'll be here. I mean, they won't be able to do anything for me. So, I mean, I want to live it. I mean, I can't see why there should be delay. I mean, when you say, violence, I mean, if they came into a point of all-out war, that, we could be annihilated if he wanted to. We're not in a position to do anything. So, I mean, I can't see why you would say, through time and maybe through time, through this, through time, through that. They know what the situation is. They know that they are doing something that is wrong. They know in order to have a capitalist form of government, somebody has to be oppressed. So, I mean, why should I have to wait?
Well, I don't see why you have to wait. I understand what you're saying. I'm interested in getting things for myself so that I don't have to say my four kids are going to have a better life, although, as you say, you want your children to have a better life. I'd like to have a better life right here. I'd like to people who live across the street from me right now who are crowded into families, into rooms that should be occupied only by one person. I'd like for their life to be tomorrow morning immediately better. But things don't happen that way. And what I think we've got to do is two things. First, to work so that things can happen immediately. But while that's going on, I think we have to realize that nothing happens immediately, that no social change happens at the click of a finger or the pushing of a button. And you've got to try to win, I think, whatever small things, no matter how small, no matter how token they may appear, because those are things that make life a little better for some of the people about whom we're speaking. They make things better for, in a small way, maybe an unmeasurable way for you, for myself, for our children, that we've got to, I think, look at our problems two ways, in a very long-range way and in a very immediate way, the sort of way that you're speaking of.
Mr. Bond, may I offer this while we have Mr. Gilbert on the line? This seems to be a problem that most of the young black youth are facing. Their feeling is that they want things to happen right now.
Well, and I say, I understand. I think everybody wants things to happen right now. All I'm trying to say is that while you're wanting and while you're working for things to happen right now, there are things that could happen tomorrow if a little effort were put to them. And while these things are admittedly very minor, as the garbage collection I spoke of earlier, or the street light, or the traffic sign at an intersection, they are things that are important in people's lives. People like to have, for instance, their garbage picked up, or a street light in front of their home so they can see where they're going if they come home late at night, or have to get up before the sun comes up in the morning. Those sorts of things ought not be ignored. And that's what I think politics, on one level, has to offer to us, those sorts of very small, very minuscule things. But they're important things and ought to be worked for.
Mr. Shields.
Yes, sir.
Can I direct one more question to him?
Certainly, sir.
Now, all right, I go along with what you say. Mm-hmm. All right, now, could you tell me, when do you think that it will come? I mean, do you really think that the white, well, basically is the rich white? I mean, there are white people that are prejudiced, but, I mean, they can't really do anything to us, economically. Mm-hmm. But it's the rich white. He's the one, and they are in the majority to also. I mean, well, they're in the minority. I mean, they're the one that are the root, the nuclear to this whole situation. And, I mean, if you're making a profit, you don't want to give it up.
Right.
You don't want to give it. So what will it take to have a society where people will be individuals, where it'll be a point where when you're black is according to your height, and when you're white is according to, well, you're white, you're 6'3", and that's it. When it comes to a point that you're not ashamed of what you are, but it's just an individual to an individual.
I don't know. I tend to be very, very pessimistic about it happening tomorrow or 10 years from now or 20 years from now or 30 years from now. And I begin to think to myself, and maybe I'm afraid to admit it to myself, that that day may never come, that things may get worse for us in this country, if that's possible, that we may find ourselves within the next 20 or 30 years in worse condition than we are in today.
No,
and it's sort of frightening.
I don't think the situation could get any worse. I mean, like, I'm at a point now, and I'll speak for the younger generation that, well, Martin Luther King made a statement that if there's nothing that a man is not willing to die for, he does not deserve to live. Now, I mean, I'm not saying that I'm going out in the street and be a fool and hit a cop and he has a stick and I have nothing. I mean, I'm not going to be like that. But there's going to come to a point that where the black is, I mean, I think it's at the point now where it's not in our hands to say, well, what's going to be done? It's in their hands. I mean, during the riots, during the death of Martin Luther King, I mean, it's up to them. I mean, now, we've shown where we are at. We are willing to say, well, we're willing to die for what we want. And if they don't give it to us, well, we'll have to die. I mean, I'd rather go believing in a principle that, well, I'm equal to you just because I'm a human being, as you are a human being. I respect you for what you are, and you respect me for what I am. And I think if the time has had to come, well, when you take it to the extremes, when it's at the point where they will say, well, they're going to, well, if we all have to go, we all have to go. I'd rather be like that than to continue in a situation like this.
Right, I think you're absolutely right. The difficulty is, however, that I think the people you're speaking about who are keeping us from recognizing the kinds of things that we want are willing to let us die. In fact, they're willing to help us die.
Yeah, true.
And that's what's frightening, that I think that large numbers of black people in this country are coming to the point where almost no action, violent or nonviolent, legal or illegal, is looked upon as being the sort of action that will help. And I think that's a dangerous point for us, where we reach the point where nothing is likely to help us. And it means, I think, almost the beginning of suicide for us, the point when the parts of the cities that we live in become smaller and smaller, the amount of political power we're able to have as we become more politically powerful is less
Mr. Gilbert, thank you for calling, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
This is Night Call in New York. Tonight, we're discussing politics and the black man. Our guest is Mr. Julian Bond. Stay tuned for the Night Call Network.
More Night Call with Del Shields and guest Julian Bond after station identification. Major General George Galston of the Maryland National Guard tomorrow on Night Call. The question, your property or their lives? General Galston on Night Call. Speak for yourself, collect on Night Call. Area code 212-749-3311 or 866-5010. To Julian Bond about politics and the black man. Again, Del Shields.
Mr. Bond, we welcome our next call from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Mr. Irving Popkis is listening to Night Call over radio station WAMO-FM. Welcome to Night Call, sir.
Thank you. Hello, Mr. Bond.
Yes.
Yeah, hi, how are you?
Okay.
I'm a white man, and one of my good friends, Maynard Jackson, has just declared for the Senate against Talmadge down in Georgia. He asked me to come down and work for him. Now, I wanted to ask three questions concerning this. First of all, what do you think his chances are? Secondly, would it be possible for me to work for him effectively, that is, a white man for a black man in Georgia? And thirdly, is there much danger involved with the situation?
Well, first, his chances, I think, are better than most people would imagine. There's a tremendous amount of anti-Talmadge sentiment in this state. It doesn't all come from black people. It comes from a great many white people. Mr. Talmadge is a relic of an older sort of politics in Georgia, the sort of politics that didn't just ignore black people, but ignored cities, ignored the larger metropolitan centers in this state, ignored all sorts of progressive things, some of which have nothing to do with race. The second thing, it would be possible for you to work for Maynard, because he wants and will get white votes as well as black votes, and he needs a great deal of help from people inside and outside the state of Georgia. And thirdly, there probably would be some danger. Mr. Talmadge has never had really strong opposition in the 12 years he's been in the Senate, and he may react in an aggressive manner to this latest challenge. I tend not to think that he won't, but there would be some danger, but I don't think it'd be any greater than opposing a machine candidate in Chicago or even in Pittsburgh.
Okay, fine. Thank you very much.
Thank you for calling, sir. This is Night Call in New York. Our guest tonight is Mr. Julian Bond, Politics and the Black Man, and we welcome your comments by calling area code 212-749-3311 or 866-5010. We'll take our next call from Newark, New Jersey. Mr. Bob Williams is listening to Night Call over radio station WLIB-FM. Welcome to Night Call, sir.
Mr. Bond, please?
Yes.
I have two questions to ask you. Would you say that black power has helped to crystallize the problem of the black people in this country? Number two, would you say that black power has helped to make the black people introverted rather than extroverted? By introverted, I mean black people are thinking of themselves. They want to develop their own neighborhoods. They want to establish some business in their own neighborhood. Would you agree with me?
Well, I'd say yes to both questions. I think it's been a positive force, both for ourselves and for those people who either are
or are not concerned with our problems, that it has made people look at us and consider us in a way that we've not been looked at or considered in the past. And I think its total effect, its overwhelming effect, has been positive.
When you see the black people, especially the girls, you see them wearing afro rather than they're wearing their hair long. And most of them are thinking of how to help themselves and how to make their living conditions better. Look at the campuses today. You see that we don't have black people trying to join fraternities or sororities. They want to have their own, they want to form their own groups and think of how they can best improve their neighborhoods when they go back to their homes. Don't you think this is a very positive step?
Yes, I say, I think it has been very positive. It's been very good for us. But one thing you should remember is something Rap Brown said, is that there are a lot of people with natural hair and processed minds.
I see.
But I think, as I say, I think the overall thrust has been tremendously beneficial and tremendously positive for us as a group of people. It has given us, I think, a great deal of self-respect that we may not have had before, and its total effect has just been very good.
And don't you think that by using the term black power, it has attracted white people's attention?
Oh, yes, I do.
Oh, thank you very much.
Thank you for calling, sir.
Bye.
We welcome our next Night Call guest, Mr. Harvey Mayer, who's listening to Night Call over WRVR-FM from Brooklyn, from the Bronx, rather. Welcome to Night Call, sir.
Welcome. Let me just say that I'm a great fan of yours, sir. I've followed your career from the beginning, and I feel quite privileged in being able to talk to you for a while.
Well, thank you.
I have two questions, or one question, one comment. One ties in directly with what the gentleman from New York just was speaking about. I've just been wondering over the last few years about the plus and the minus of the idea of racial pride. It seems to me that Negroes in this country and black people generally around the country have been so demeaned by the way the society has operated that a buildup of racial pride has got to be a healthy thing to a certain extent. But I kind of feel a little bit distrust about how far it can be carried. It seems to me that the idea of building a pride in something over which you have no control can possibly, in the long run, be destructive, too. After all, you don't choose your own parents.
Oh, I see what you mean. Well, I agree it could be destructive. I don't think it has been,
and I hope
it will not be. I think it could be, but I just don't think it will be. Of course, I think that black people are capable of the same sorts of cruelties and capable of committing the same sorts of injustices that have been visited on them. That is, they're capable physiologically. I hope that emotionally and psychologically that we are incapable of reversing the slate, of returning evil for evil, and that hopefully we will use this new sense of identity and this new power that we strive for in a positive way.
I certainly hope so, too. Now, to the second point, I heard a show some years ago on WRVR, I think here it was in town, a lecture by a Mr. What's his name? A Japanese fella who's an expert in semantics. Do you recall? Would you know
no.
the name?
No.
Well, I'll probably have come to me later. In any event, he was talking about how prejudice can operate to kill the will of somebody to accomplish something. And I was just thinking of what your first caller spoke of earlier this evening about what can we do and why should we have to wait any longer? And obviously, the impatience of folks who can see all around them what other people have been able to accomplish and what seems to be cut off from them is very understandable. And the gentleman who spoke on semantics had what I thought was a really crucial point to make, which was that when people get the feeling that no matter what they do, they won't be recognized, there is a principle known as the the operation of the self-fulfilling prophecy that comes into play. In other words, there's nothing I can do. No matter how well I prepare myself, people won't accept me for what I've prepared myself to do, and therefore there's no use. And eventually hope is killed, and ambition is killed, and everything goes down the drain. So I wonder if you would agree, if you had a chance again to talk to the fellow who was on first, if you said that the time is now in the country where there is, there looks like there's a possible opening for black people to be accepted, not accepted, but recognized for what they can do. We see it in sports, which began with Jackie Robinson, I suppose, and well, before that it was always boxing, but that was violent. But now we have a sport like baseball, which in which people don't do violence to each other, and we have it in the arts, and we're beginning to have it in other fields. And it seems to me that if black people would take the attitude that now, if they do prepare themselves to do a job and to do it well, to pick out something that they can do well, and Lord knows there's plenty of things that people can do well, that they have a chance to be accepted for what they can do.
Well, I think that's...
On that alone, and I think that could be the saving grace, because obviously there's an awful lot of talent going to waste in this country, and if we could harness it all, our problems would disappear.
Well, I think that's true, and will be true for some people, but it's not going to be true, unfortunately, for the masses of poor black people, or poor white people, for that matter, who are unable to prepare themselves for whatever opportunity may arise, and some of whom, however fantastically prepared they become, we'll find that there are no opportunities for them. The sorts of jobs that unskilled people used to be able to do in this country are disappearing.
True.
The job market is shrinking rather than expanding in those sorts of professions. I just think that the problem of the masses of people is tremendously more complicated than that. I agree that there are some things that we can do that we couldn't do some months ago, or some years ago, rather, but for...
And things are opening up all the time, of course.
But for the majority of us, I think that no amount of preparation is really going to make a great deal of difference in our lives.
Thank you for calling, sir.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. We'll take our next call from Mr. Hubert, who is listening to Night Call over WDIA in Memphis, Tennessee. Welcome to Night Call, sir.
Good evening, Mr. Braun.
Yes.
I would like to know your viewpoint on the Negro that is elected in office, but does not use his own judgment in running his office. What I mean, you know, the white tell him what to do.
Well, that kind of fellow shouldn't be allowed to stay in office too much longer. Now, in Memphis, you have some men whom I've always thought were pretty good. Two guys in the House of Representatives, Mr. Willis and Mr. Sugarman, whom I've always had a lot of respect for. But I think if you have a situation any place where you've got a guy, white or black, in office, doesn't listen to the people who put him in office, and he ought not be in office, and people like yourself are those people who've got to do the hard work of getting him out.
Do you think the trend would be more from this to this?
Well, I think...
With the black men in office.
What I hope is going to happen is there are going to be many, many more black men in office. Now, you know that we got some crooks, and we have a lot of very decent people, too. I hope what's going to happen is that we'll get more decent people, that they're going to render a real service to the people they represent, and that they'll be able to make some changes, however small, in the lives of the people who put them in office.
Yes, I have another question. Do you think that there will come a time that a black man can run for president, you know, freely and win?
Well, you got one black man running now. Dick Gregory is a candidate, a write-in candidate for the presidency of the United States. The time, I think, is pretty far along, or is pretty far away, when a black man's going to be a nominee of one of the two major parties. It may not be as far away as I think it is, but as I say, I tend to be very pessimistic about these things and think that I might not live to see it.
Thank you for calling, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. This is Night Call in New York. Stay tuned for the Night Call Network.
More Night Call with Del Shields and guest Julian Bond after station identification. In our city and state and all across the United States, people are talking about trouble, black and white trouble. Some call it racial tension or see poverty as the real problem, or say law and order has given way to anarchy in our streets. Most people agree, at least, that there is a crisis, and we are a people with many unanswered questions. This station believes you deserve to ask your own questions and get some answers, or at least opinions, from people who should know what they're talking about. So we bring you Night Call, the new nationwide listener call-in show where you ask your questions and express your opinions to leaders such as John Lindsay, Ralph Abernathy, John Gardner, Stokely Carmichael, and Sergeant Shriver. Night Call, the new nationwide radio forum on important issues facing you and the rest of the nation. Night Call, each weeknight. Speak for yourself, collect on Night Call, area code 212-749-3311 or 866-5010 to Julian Bond about politics and the black man. Again, Del Shields.
And on this 1 minute, I guess, past the hour of midnight, we welcome the many stations who join us for the second half hour of Night Call. And we'll take our next call from Portland, Oregon. Mr. Johansson, who is listening to Night Call. Welcome to Night Call, sir.
Hello?
Welcome to Night Call, sir.
Is this Mr. Bond?
Yes, I'm here.
Mr. Bond, there's one question that's been in my mind for a long time. Pardon me. And that is, why don't the colored folks, instead of making all this here freedom marches and all this here disturbance, why don't they pool their resources, because some of them have money, a lot of them have money, and buy up small businesses if they have to, but get that start to go into business and help the Negroes that way?
Well, first, not too many of us that do have money. This city, for instance, has more black millionaires than any other city in the country, and there are only 8 of them here. And they tend, a great many of them, to act like other millionaires. That is, they don't want to spread their money around. They want to keep it for themselves and make more money for themselves. The difficulty is that I think what you're suggesting is that we pull ourselves up by our bootstraps. We don't have any boots. We're running around barefoot, while other groups of people who come to this country as immigrants had a little bit of a head start on us. And we're trying to catch up as best we can, and a great many of us are interested in business. But no amount of small businesses are going to really solve the economic and social problems that we have. I think that sort of help is going to have to come from the various governments in the areas of the country where we live. I just don't think it's going to be possible for us to build industries.
Well, we can ask now, here in Portland, they're starting up a bank here for the purpose of loaning money out to just such a thing. And we do have one business here that's opened up that's for the Negroes and hiring Negroes and sell their products to everybody or anybody wants to buy, of course.
And well,
that's why I can't figure out why they have to have such a disturbance when they could work more toward that end. You know?
Well, we have here, sir, several black insurance companies owned by black people, a bank, a savings and loan institution, great many companies of different sorts, one or two small manufacturing plants owned by Negroes and operated by Negroes and sell their products to the general public. But even at that, that's not about to solve all of our problem. Our problem is employment, and we're not, I don't think, going to get in a position of being able to employ ourselves.
That would create employment.
Oh, certainly it does, and that's the sort of thing you suggest goes on, but I don't think we'll ever be able to generate enough employment simply among ourselves to employ ourselves. We are part of this country, and we have to depend on the country to give us a boost to help us get the sorts of things that we need. Other groups of people in this society have done it that way, and
then there's another question I'd like to ask. Of course, I know I don't know what can be done about it, the black people multiply much faster, and those that are saying they're so poor in poverty, they have the big families. Why don't they come to their senses and say, wait a minute, I better straighten up what I got before I make any more?
Well, it may be, sir, that they like children,
Or it may be that they don't have as much knowledge as you may about birth control devices. It may be for any number of reasons. But I would like to think that in this country a man could have as large a family as he chose and be able to support it.
Well, yeah, sure. But right now, it's as long as they're trying to get something, it looks like they're working against themselves.
Well, that may look that way from your viewpoint, but I'd like to think that large families come about in groups of poor people, both white and black, and that they tend to have large families either through choice or through ignorance.
That's right.
And if they do it through choice, I think people ought to have as large a family as they can. We're a minority. Maybe if we have more children, we'll become the majority, and then we'll be able to do the things we want without having to depend on government.
Thank you for calling, sir.
Well, I guess we'll just have to live with it and see how it turns out.
Thank you for calling, sir.
Okay, thank you for your time.
This is NICOL in New York, and we'd like to welcome the fine people in Atlanta who have joined us. And we have with us Mr. Julian Bond in our discussion tonight, Politics and the Black Man. We'll take our next call from San Diego, California. Mr. Costello, who's listening to Night Call over radio station KOGO-FM. Welcome to Night Call, sir.
I would like to direct my questions to Representative Bond.
Yes, sir.
First of all, let me congratulate you on your comments that you just made about large families.
Well, thank you.
I happen to be the father of 13 children.
Oh, congratulations to you.
I'm a man 52 years old, white, and I've managed to get five of the 13 out of college already. Some are teachers and so forth. And I'm very proud of my large family. So much for the comments on the large family. What I wanted to ask you, Representative Bond, is which way do you think the black people are going to go as far as the major parties are concerned? Would you say that the majority were going to go Democratic?
Well, let me be sure as I tell you that what I'm telling you is what I think will happen, not necessarily what I want to happen. What I think is going to happen is the black vote's going to stay Democratic as it has been for the last couple of elections. It's going to stay that way because most black people, I think, look to the Democratic Party, and probably mistakenly, but look to the Democratic Party as the party that's going to care a little bit more about them than the Republican Party has. I don't think Mr. Nixon, if he's the nominee, is going to offer any kind of real choice to black people. I think Mr. Humphrey, if he's the Democratic nominee, is going to give the appearance of offering that choice, and he may well do that for a great many black voters, but I tend to think that most voters in this upcoming election would remain in the Democratic Party.
I see. I seem to share that same belief. The reason I raise this question, now, there is some talk that Senator Brooks may be the running mate, either is it for Nixon or for Rockefeller, I'm not sure.
Well, I've heard about him in both connections.
And that's the reason I wondered just which way the black people were going to go. My second question, if I may have the liberty, I don't want to impose too much of my time on the program, and that is, what inroads do you think Wallace will make as far as the black people are concerned?
Well, in Alabama, he gets about, I think, a quarter of the black vote, and I think he got it when he ran for governor, I guess it was 6 years ago now, and his wife got it, his late wife got it when she ran for governor some 3 years ago or 2 years ago. The reason they got it is because the Wallaces made some small concessions to black people that their opposition didn't make. In some things, Mr. Wallace is a little more liberal than he is on race, and he did make some feelers into some parts of the black community in Alabama. I doubt, however, that running in any of the other states of the Union or even in Alabama as a presidential candidate, that he would get any black votes besides those that would go to him because people make a mistake when they vote.
I see.
Thank you for calling, sir.
Thank you very much, sir, and God bless you.
Thank you. This is Night Call in New York. Our telephone number is area code 212-749-3311 or 866-5010. That's area code 212-749-3311, 866-5010. If you're calling from out of town, remember you can call collect. Politics and the Black Man, our guest tonight, Mr. Julian Bond. We're talking to him from Atlanta, Georgia. We'll accept our next call from Jacksonville, Florida. Mr. Ting is listening to Night Call over radio station WRHC. Welcome to Night Call, sir.
How are you doing, sir? I'd like to phrase this question like this, that Representative Bond will realize that, that inadequate education results in illiteracy, and poverty is one of the main causes of this inadequate education. But how does this illiteracy affect the black vote in the South, or perhaps throughout the country? How do you feel that affects it?
Well, I don't think it affects it as much as people think it does. In this country, people have such access to radio, to television, that they're able to get a notion of their own about what man they want or don't want to vote for or against. So I don't think there's much harm done politically because so many black people are illiterate. I think harm could be done if a clever man began to try to manipulate that vote simply because it is illiterate. And I've heard of an election in your state, for instance, in which a woman was running for city council in Miami, and one of her opponents told voters that because they had voted for her in the primary, they didn't have to vote for her in a primary runoff in which she ran. And apparently some black voters believed him and didn't come out for the runoff, and she didn't win the position. But I don't think there's much likelihood of that going on if the so-called good guys, those black people who are running for public office, are aggressive and campaign hard enough, then they don't have to worry about losing votes because of illiteracy. They may have to worry about losing some because they don't offer the proper alternative, but I don't think they have to worry about much because of illiteracy.
Representative Bond, now that we do have the Civil Rights Commission checking on voter registration, is there very much widespread lack of registration of voters here in the South because of illiteracy? Has all of this been a gradual changeover where the black man can vote if he has proven that he is a taxpayer or whatever the voters?
Well, what's happened is that the Voting Rights Act, if properly applied, would make a fantastic difference. Now, it has made a great difference in some parts of the South, in some parts of Alabama, Mississippi, and Georgia, but there are a great many counties that are covered by that act that could have had federal examiners where, for one reason or another, and I think the reason is largely politics, there were no federal examiners sent in, and black voters are still having to go down to the county courthouse and face the sheriff or other public officials who have been hostile to them over a period of years. So that all of the barriers to registration have not been removed. On the law books, it's fine, but in point of fact, in actual reality, it's still difficult task for some people in some parts of the South.
Well, then how would one go about getting a federal examiner to come in to supervise the registration of voters?
Well, in this state, in the state of Georgia, people had to send telegrams, had to write letters, and finally had to go to Washington. And after that, we got federal examiners in three counties in this state. We ought to have them in 25 or more. Registration in this state is not what it should be, and it's primarily because of intimidation and harassment that's existed over the past few years. And a great deal of the decision-making, I think, about whether or not to send federal examiners to a particular part of the South has a great deal to do with politics. Senator Russell from Georgia, for instance, is a powerful man. I'm sure he was not interested in registering more black voters in this state because I'm not too sure that they'd vote for him.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for calling, sir. This is Night Call in New York, area code 212-749-3311 and 866-5010. Politics and the Black Man is our subject tonight, and our guest is Mr. Julian Bond. And we'll give our stations a chance to identify themselves, and then we'll be coming back. We have some calls from Omaha, Nebraska, and some other out-of-town calls. Stay tuned for the Night Call Network.
More Night Call with Del Shields and guest Julian Bond after station identification. Black is a red-blooded American color. The black showed the color of his blood in places like Vietnam and Korea and every other all-American battleground since the Revolution. Every time his country calls for help, he hears. But we don't seem to hear him when he calls. If black and white would listen with their hearts, they could hear each other. That's what Night Call is all about. It lets people air their views man to man, caller to caller, live from phones anywhere in the country. A syringe full of junk bites into black and white skin with the same ruining surge, and a black mother cries over her child just like a white one does. The problems are the same. The characters just have different colors. Night Call's person-to-person nationwide radio hookup lets the black and the white tell it like it is. Speak for yourself, collect on Night Call, area code 212-749-3311 or 866-5010 to Julian Bond about politics and the black man. Again, Del Shields.
We'll accept our next call, Mr. Bond, from Omaha, Nebraska, Mr. Everettson, who's listening to Night Call over radio station KBON. Welcome to Night Call, sir.
Hello. First, Mr. Bond, I'd like to say I've always admired courage, especially courage against pretty large odds, and I think you had it. I admire you, your courage very much.
Well, thank you.
And I am in sympathy to a great extent with what you're trying to gain and what the colored people as a whole are trying to gain in their constitutional rights and everything like this. But I think along the line, someone made it very difficult. I think at the onset of this movement, a number of years ago, several years ago, that there was a great deal of sympathy throughout the United States for the movement, and I think it still exists. But by, I think, some kind of bad advice or something to connect the movement with foreign policy, like to connect it with the Vietnamese War, a lot of people find it difficult to work for the goals that these people want to obtain and everything like that without buying the whole package. For instance, a man's representation, his right to representation, is certainly worth fighting for, regardless of who the man is, whether he's colored or whether he's white or whatever he is. This is his right. And if one suffers, then the whole country must suffer, regardless of race. Because you can't do damage to one without doing damage to the other, and irrespective of the man's race. But at the same time, you can't do this without buying this whole package. And I don't think this has helped any. In fact, I think it's caused a great deal of division, not only among the races, but among the people themselves, among your people themselves, among my people themselves, which of course is our people because we're all the same nation. And I think this has caused a very, very great deal of trouble. And I think if this was removed, that very shortly the biggest cause of friction in the country would be withdrawn. And I think this is the reason it was interjected in the first place. Not to obtain anything from anyone, but to delay and obstruct it. And where the I'd like to know what you think about it.
Well, I understand what you're saying, although I don't agree with it. I happen to think there is a connection between America's foreign policy and its domestic problems. However, I'd hope that if you disagree with me, that you'd still, if you agree
surely.
With part of what I say, then you'd support me on that part and disagree with me on the other.
I agree that
you... I don't think people ought to think that they have to buy the whole package, as you say.
I believe that you have a right to think what you want to think. I mean, the fact that a man don't likes his coffee black and I like mine with cream don't make me have to dislike the man altogether because I dislike his coffee.
Right.
But the fact remains, I think this is probably one of the greatest detriments. But I'm glad I got a chance to speak to you, and good night.
Okay.
Thank you for calling, sir. This is Night Call in New York. We'll take our next call from New York City, Mr. Jeter, or Jetter, rather. Is calling from Night Call, or listening to Night Call, rather, over radio station WLIV-FM. Welcome to Night Call, sir.
Hello? Julian Bond.
Yes.
This is Herschel Jeter. A friend of yours.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I've been listening to your show, man, and, I'm unhappy, period. I guess everyone is, over the system, of the white system, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And, I'm not a violent person, and just I don't see any way out. And up to date, man, I think There's no way. It just has to be revolution. And I'm being frank, you know. Everybody knows the way that the white system is operated, you know. And all you have to do is, like, plant your seeds and let them grow, and plant your bombs and let them blow up. That's all I have to say.
Well, it may be that you're right. I'm not so sure for these reasons. First, because I think that granting what you say about the system in this country, that it's so powerful that it's capable not just of stamping out a revolution, but of completely destroying physically those people who try to make revolution. So for that reason, I think it'd be extremely difficult, if not impossible, to mount a successful revolution. I mean, Che Guevara said that the streets of Harlem are not like the Sierra Maestre, that what he and Fidel Castro were able to do there cannot be done in this country, that you cannot translate what was done in the sugar fields of Cuba to the streets of the big cities of this country.
Well, what do you think going to happen? You believe in a cycle. Well, you understand a cycle. There is a cycle.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And
right.
Like things happening for, you know, progression.
Yeah.
You know, like, well, what is going to happen? Is it today? Is it out today? Is it going to happen today, tomorrow, or when?
I don't know. I think it's getting harder and harder
I think this question was asked before.
I think it's harder and harder to predict. Now, 2 or 3 years ago, I would have felt confident to say, well, this is going to happen, and that's going to happen, and this is going to happen. But now I'm not sure. I think it's all up in the air. I'm very pessimistic about anything positive really happening. In point of fact, opposition in this country is getting worse. It's not getting better.
Yeah, and we have to make it happen, right?
Yeah, I think so.
And how can we make it happen?
Well, again, I'm not sure about that either. The difficulty is that what's liable to happen is something's liable to happen to us. Now, the question is, will that be worse than what's happening to us already?
No, like, look, man, I don't mind dying, and everybody should feel this way, you know, the way things is now. Especially the black man.
Well, I think that's true about people of our age. But what about all those hundreds and thousands who are 45, 50, 60 years old? What is there for them?
Wow, like, it's the young generation now, you know?
Yeah, but our mothers and fathers.
Yes, but like, wow, you just have to be war, man. Just have to be war.
Well, you may be right.
Thank you for calling, sir.
Okay.
Thank you for calling. This is Night Call in New York. We'll accept our next call, Miss Berry, who's listening to Night Call over WTLC in Indianapolis, Indiana. Welcome to Night Call.
Mr. Shields?
Yes.
I'd like to know, I'd like to speak to Mr. Vaughn.
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, well, I'd like to know if you think that there's a possibility sometime in the future that a black man could take part in presidential activities or politics.
Well, black people do take part. As I said earlier, Dick Gregory is running as a candidate for the presidency. I think if you mean there will be a time in the future when there will be a black man running as the Democratic or Republican nominee, that's a long way from happening. It's not going to happen anytime soon.
Well, that's what I mean, in the future sometime.
Well, it will be in the future sometime. A long time.
Well, that's all I wanted to know.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you for calling.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Wicker is listening to Night Call over radio station WSRC-FM in Durham, North Carolina. Welcome to Night Call, sir.
Hello, how are you doing?
Fine, thank you.
I was interested in knowing from Mr. Bond his comments on this situation. Even though President Johnson and others say that our society is not fit, first of all, what is your opinion of this? And secondly, do you think that the Negro can fulfill his objectives on civil rights through politics only?
Well, first, let me answer the last one. First, I don't think there's any single thing that we ought to do. That is, I think those people who say this is the answer are wrong, because I don't think there is one answer to our problem. I think it's many, many different things, and it's different things for different people. Like the song says, it's different strokes for different folks. For some people, to get some things, politics is very effective. It works. It does all sorts of things, like pave streets, like put up traffic signs, like those sorts of things that people need that are very important to some people. It doesn't do a lot of other things that are equally as important, in fact, or more important. For some people, demonstrations is the thing. And you could still, in neighborhoods in this country where there's a store that doesn't hire black people, it doesn't treat black people properly, properly mount a demonstration and within a matter of days force the owner of the store to do whatever it is that you want him to do. So there are all these different sorts of techniques available to us, and we ought not depend on any one, I think. I think that would be a very bad mistake. And now I've forgotten what your first question was.
The first question was, what is your comment on the statement that has been made by President Johnson and other politicians that our society is not sick? I think if we remember Martin Luther King before he died, the night before he died, made some reference to the fact that our society is a sick society.
Well, I think he's correct, and I think that there's been a lot of discussion lately about guilt for the assassinations of Dr. King and just recently of Senator Robert Kennedy.
Yes.
And the question of guilt is not whether or not everybody in the country had their fingers on the trigger when the gun was fired, but whether or not everybody in the country contributed, knowingly or unknowingly, to the sorts of climate that creates assassinations of a political nature, that creates the sorts of men who could plot and conspire and hire someone to assassinate Martin Luther King. And I think the fact is that people in this country, all over this country, do contribute to that sort of a society. And they may do it without knowing it, but they do it. And as long as they continue to do it, those sorts of things are going to continue to happen.
Thank you for calling, sir.
Thank you.
Mr. Bond, I'd like to pose a question to you, and I'll give you just about 60 seconds to give us an answer on this.
Okay.
Where does the initiative for black people to enter politics come from?
Well, I think the initiative has to come from within the community. It has to come from individuals and from groups, from people who are not getting anything from politics now, who see a chance of getting something from it, however small, and who think that whatever that thing is that they want is worth a little effort, worth a little fighting. It's got to come from, as Dr. King used to say, from those people with PhDs and those with no Ds, those people who speak very well and those people who can hardly speak at all. It's got to come from all of us, because it's all of us who are hurting. I mean, some hurt a little more than others, but all of us hurt together. And we're all in a leaky boat, and it's leaking under our feet. And unless we all get together and try to bail the water out, we're going to go down.
Well, we have heard from some people who have stated, or some black people who have stated many times, that they would like to vote for a black candidate, but they didn't want to vote for him just because he was black.
Well, I think it depends on the situation. Now, there's some black people I wouldn't vote for, but there's some I would vote for, even though I don't think they're the best people in the world. I think it depends on the individual situation, and people ought not have any hesitation about voting for a black man just because he's black. I've heard black people say, well, I'm not going to vote for him just because he's black. Even though the man in question may be a tremendously good guy, I think that sort of reverse, I don't know if it's not racism, that sort of reverse attitude toward black people from black people is very harmful to us.
Mr. Bond, we want to thank you for being with us, and as many people, many of the Night Call listeners have stated tonight, they've admired you for your courage, and we certainly thank you for being with us tonight on Night Call.
Well, thank you for giving me the opportunity.
This is Del Shields in New York. Good night and peace.
Night Call, the new nationwide listener call-in show on vital issues. Tomorrow night, same time, same station. Major General George Gelston, Adjutant General, Maryland, Commanding General, Maryland National Guard, on your property or their lives, should looters be shot. Listen tomorrow night. Discuss freely and responsibly your own personal opinions. Speak for yourself on Night Call. Produced by the United Methodist Church, presented with National Council of Churches, National Catholic Office for Radio and Television, and National Urban Coalition.